Text 51552.
Dave Fanning on 2FM.
Now, I have in front of me a piece of paper telling me about the 6th to the 11th of July at the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre in Dublin. It is The Producers, the Mel Brooks smash hit. There are two people, as you know very well, from The Producers from the past, Max Bialystock and Leo Bloom. And there's one person sitting in front of me who's neither of those two. But who do you play in this whole thing? Mr. Ross Noble, welcome to the programme.
Hello, it's lovely to be here. Can I just say congratulations on a beautiful radio studio.
It is nice, isn't it? Yeah.
It really is quite. It's the first time, certainly, I've ever done a radio interview at some sort of neon blackjack table.
That's exactly what it is. It's a bit sort of 70s disco, though, as well. It's missing the disco ball.
There's an awful lot of neon in here.
There is an awful
I'm liking
lot,
yeah. it. I'm liking it a lot. It's got a late night.
It does.
And are those colours changing?
Those colours do change later
Excellent.
On, but only after 8 o'clock at night.
Oh, thank God for that. Thank God for that. I thought we were... for a moment, I thought I got my head jammed in Tokyo.
No, it's the LED situation that we're in here. You should see it at 9 o'clock at night. It's amazing.
It's lovely. I play Franz Liebkin, the... anyone who hasn't seen The Producers before, it's basically... down on his luck Broadway producer who his accountant discovers that if you overfund a show and then the show fails immediately, you get to keep all the money and no one has to get paid back. So it's a foolproof scheme. So they are set about to try and find the worst show that they can put on that's going to guarantee them a flop. And that's where they find my character, who's a former... Well, he's basically...
You're a Nazi.
A Nazi, yeah. He's a Nazi soldier who has escaped to America and is... now keeps pigeons, and he's written a play called Springtime for Hitler, and they meet up with him and they convince him to let them put on the play, and which they do, and unfortunately instead of it being a flop it's a runaway hit, and obviously they're then in massive trouble because they have to pay, but you know, it looks like they're going to pay back the money, looks like they're going to go to prison, and they've got my character trying to kill them. So it's the sort of show where it's because it's Mel Brooks, it's just laugh after laugh after laugh. So you've got even the songs have got laughs in them. So it's one of those shows where, I mean, certainly the first time I saw, I just, you know, just thought this is one of the best shows ever written, you know. So it's definitely worth.
When you say show, are we talking here about you having seen a stage show, or
yes.
are we talking about the movie that a lot of people would know?
Well, I saw the movie when I was a kid,
yeah.
and I've always been a fan of the movie. But yeah, I went and saw the West End version,
yeah.
the musical, and I was already a fan of the movie. And you know, when the sort of things get, you know, it's like when they make books into films and all the rest of it. I thought, the show is, it's incredible.
Well, apart from the many strings to your bow, Ross, there is a thing about, and obviously you're well used to treading the boards and have done so many tours, solo, stand-up, etc., 15 or 16 of those. This is still a bit of a departure for you, isn't it? To be part of an ensemble, if you like,
yeah.
and do what you're told for a change.
Yeah, but I'm loving that. It's a really, because the ensemble... honestly, it's one of those things where I think when you come from a stand-up background, because Jason Manford, you know, is the star of the show, he plays Leo Bloom, so, you know, he's from a stand-up background as well, and there's that thing of, you know, you turn up and you think, you know, you do a two and a half hour stand-up show, and people always go, oh, that must be exhausting, that must be tiring, hey, just you on the stage by yourself, and then you turn up the first day in the rehearsal room, and all the guys and gals, all the ensemble, just these phenomenal, you know, they're all like amazing singers and dancers, and they're like flat out non-stop all the way through the show, you know. So, so from that point of view, the next time somebody goes, oh, hey, that must be tiring, hey, doing stand-up. Oh, no.
Yeah, you right, exactly. This, like... Well, we're talking 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 of July, The Producers at the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre.
I thought you were counting. I thought you were going.
No.
I thought,
no,
when
no,
it comes
no,
to
no.
singing and dancing, we're talking.
No.
4, 5, 6,
no,
7, 8,
no,
9, 10,
no,
11,
no.
12, 34.
Never anything
now,
like
now,
that.
Start now.
Okay, like the funny thing is when I say like a different discipline for you, I mean, the discipline for you has always been that you don't have any discipline, and people have always said that's your strength in some ways.
Yes.
Like, you know, the stream of consciousness and all the rest that people talk about. All of that kind of thing. When you do that on stage and go, off on, like, literally a tangent, no matter what's happening. Yeah. If somebody heckles you from the audience, do you kind of want that almost, to almost bring you back and realise, wait, maybe the heckler is just asking what I left out 14, 15, 20 minutes ago?
No, because usually if I'm, you know, usually if I'm going off on a tangent, then it's because I'm following an idea that's interesting me. So, I want to kind of stay in the moment. Sometimes if a heckler comes in and goes, get back to the thing, you kind of go, well, I'll get back to that. You know, not now, because it's you want the flow to go.
Yeah,
you know?
But getting back to the thing, I mean, do you like to get back to the thing? Or have there been times you haven't got back to the thing and you've woken up in the middle of the night saying, oh, I forgot to finish that thing?
All the time. Really? All the time, yeah. In fact, I'll sometimes the next day, I'll be wandering about the town or whatever. Somebody will come up and go, I was at the show last night. What was that thing about finishing the show in a bus stop?
You know, I'm just thinking that maybe tweeting is the new good-mannered way of heckling, that they can send you a tweet and say, where were you going with that?
Yes.
You didn't finish it.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
might be nicer, more mannerly.
That's the first time I've ever heard somebody describe Twitter as being
a good-mannered
thing, because normally it's just when people decide to heckle you on Twitter.
But people would tweet and ask, would they?
No, very much so.
People are saying that, like, all this bit about being the randomist and the inspired nonsense that you do, and that has that changed in the last couple of years? And if you think I'm asking, has relationship and kids changed you? I kind of am.
Right.
A lot of the stuff that you would have done before was just like the kind of the extended student thing of watching too much television, or maybe playing too much of this, or maybe having a few pints too many or whatever. And then reality hits in at some stage, which it did with you in some ways. I'm going to call reality having a partner and having a kid.
Therefore,
does that change the way you work or what your material might look like?
I think it's less... It's a very good question. I'm glad you asked it. You're listening to The Arts Hour. No, you know the main difference? It's not so much the fact that you go, oh my God, I've got responsibilities now. It's more just the fact that before I had a wife and kids, I didn't really have a life. My entire life was just being on stage. So like that was the bit of the day where I was most alive, because it was that thing of everything. The rest of the time, I was pretty much just in standby waiting to go on stage.
Yeah.
And that was the bit they go, yes, this is the best bit of the day, woohoo!
Yeah.
And you do it, and then the rest of the time you just kind of... But that was, as soon as I met my wife, it changed insofar as that I actually started doing things. I actually started to sort of engage with the real world, because dead easy as a comedian just to... You know, you just spend your whole time just kind of daydreaming. So, it changed just in terms of, like, you know, you just have to, even now, like the fact that, you know, with the kids, I have to do the school run and maybe just go down the shops or whatever. You can't just think, you know what, I'll just order a pizza at midnight.
Yeah,
you
know? Stay with the snook till 4 in the morning or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But, like, I mean, if your whole thing is some kind of a celebration of the unfettered imagination and the wildness of it all, don't we all have that, really? It's just that you have taken it to the extent of, forget the barriers that we all have, and especially with 9 to 5 and the jobs we have or whatever, the 9 kids, just do it.
Maybe
we could all do it if we just unleash the shackles.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy for me because it's my job, you know. I've sort of managed to, I've managed to make that. But yeah, I think life is all of it. You know, I don't understand people who, I mean, fair enough, if you've got responsibilities and you're worried about, you know, paying the bills and all the rest of it. But I don't understand people who, if you've got a great job that pays well, I would rather have less money and be having fun than, you know, I just sort of think it's for me, and it might just because I'm bored easily, but, you know, for me, it's all about just being in the moment, just doing stuff that's exciting and different. And that's why, like, my TV show, Freewheeling, that I do, you know, that's one of those things where, if you haven't seen it, it's basically people tweet me, and they can tweet me anything at all. They just send me a tweet. I say, what are you doing? They say, you know, I'm in a business meeting and I'm bored, or I'm up a ladder painting or whatever, and I'm watching such and such, and then I'll just turn up and just make up the show as you go along. And there's something quite and obviously I've turned that into a show, but I love that thing of just going, of just getting up, you know, and I get on my motorbike and travel there, just going, we're traveling somewhere. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to travel across Africa. You don't have to, you know, trek up the, you know, go up whatever, find Machu Picchu or something like that. You can just, you know, you can literally just go into a pub, talk to somebody. What are you doing later? Where are you going? You know, getting a taxi. Just take me somewhere. You know, allow adventures to happen.
So do you think you're no more of a freak than the rest of us? It's just that you happen to not suppress it, I'd say.
Yeah, it's exactly. Kids, like, you look at kids. A kid doesn't think, oh, I better not skip down this street. Oh, I better not... You know, when you know, a kid's walking along the street.
I know exactly what you mean.
Do you know what I mean?
It's like fantastic to look at a 4-year-old and they're walking on the street, just going, I'd love to do that.
Yeah,
well, I'm not allowed.
There's no rules against it. You know, I mean, obviously, you know, my 6-year-old, we have to explain to her that she has to wear clothes.
Right.
Sometimes she's like, oh, I can't be bothered. And you go, no, really, in the supermarket it would be, or just stick along the railings. When was the last time you ran a stick
along the railings?
I did it the other day.
Did you?
Pick up a stick, just...
Yeah, but there's certain things that one might do as an adult that one might get arrested for.
There is that.
Yes. Especially the walking down the street naked, maybe, or in the supermarket naked.
Yeah, that's true. Well, it depends what aisle you're in. If you go in the underwear aisle, and you just go, oh, you've got no clothes on. You say, well, I'm
getting ready to buy some underwear.
Yeah, that's why I'm in.
That's right, yeah. Okay. When you do that, like, I keep making it look as though every single thing you do, you go on with nothing, I'm not talking about clothes, I'm talking about ideas, and they go off into whatever it is. Yeah. But is there scripted stuff? And if there is scripted stuff, is it just a launch pad for the Flights of Fancy? Obviously, we know the Flights of Fancy is what because you're Ross Noble, but is there scripted stuff to kind of bounce off?
The way that it works is I go on stage and I improvise, and I might improvise for sort of 10 or 20 minutes about something,
yeah.
And then from that, you know, like if I'm say in the afternoon, something happens to me, I'll go on stage and I think, right, I might talk about that tonight, but I don't sit down and script it out and go, this is the, you know, so I don't know. How I don't know what it's going to be.
There aren't even bullet points. It's like, nothing at all.
No, it's like a, you know, say like this, for example, right? This neon. If I was doing a gig tonight,
you're talking about this studio.
I would probably talk about the fact that all Irish radio stations have got unnecessary lighting in them. Right? That could be anything. It could just be, you know, that could start taking me down a kind of Saturday Night Fever type vibe. You know, the fact, you know, so along those lines. But I wouldn't sit there beforehand and go, right, what am I going to say about this? I'd go on, I'd start talking, I'd see where that goes, and then. From that 10, 15 minutes or whatever, there might be like 20, 30 seconds that I think, that you arrive on an idea. Because obviously you're talking to the audience, so all these things are kind of, they're all coming together at once, you know, they're all in the mix. So then there might be 20 or 30 seconds that, because the next night, if I wasn't in Dublin, if I was in Birmingham, I can't then start talking about an Irish radio station because people would just, why would you bother, you know? So there might be, say, 20 or 30 seconds that I go, well, that doesn't rely on people knowing what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Then I'll be there, so I'll go on and I'll be talking about something else and I'll think, right, I'll talk about that. So then that thing comes back in. But then, does this make any sense?
It's making a lot of sense because you're going to get back there. I know you are.
So it's basically...
The studio.
So that thing then becomes... So I might be on my way to talking about that thing and that might spark something. I might not ever get back to the thing that I planned to talk about from the day before. Or that 30 seconds becomes 5 minutes and then that leads me off into, you know, it's just sort of...
Well, then, which is it? Like, where's the skill? Is it making stuff up? No, wait, hold on. Or is it understanding what to do with the stuff? Is it like, nonsense is great, let's celebrate nonsense, but it's understanding something about nonsense that maybe other people don't understand?
That is an interesting question and a philosophical point. To be honest, I don't think about it that deep. I just do it.
And in the same way, would you rather people didn't necessarily analyse Ross Noble, enjoy the gig?
Sometimes that can be a problem. Sometimes people come along to the show and they're so hung up on... They're sat there just going, well, hang on, he must be... That person there... And then sometimes I'll do a whole load of stuff where I'll talk to somebody in the front row... and you know, all this stuff will come from it, and we'll, you know, and then afterwards people come up and go, "Is that a plant?" You just go, "Yeah, I was rehearsing with that person for like a week." So, but yeah, that's the trouble. Sometimes people can come along and then they overanalyze it and then they forget to just watch the show. But at the end of the day, you know, you can get all la-di-da and you can start, "Oh, it's deconstructing this," and yeah, it's, you know, blah, blah. At the end of the day, it's kind of me just dicking about.
Yeah, that's kind of, okay, that's you can talk about deconstruction and reconstruction, but there are four words that have been used to define Ross Noble. Oh. Leave, weave, conflate, reincarnate. I think that's pretty good.
What? Where did that come from?
I have no idea. I don't know. I just got that there. I think that's pretty, that's what you do.
You just came up with it?
No, I didn't. No, I got it somewhere. But my point about it, I can't even remember where I got it from. But the point I'm making is that this is what you do. It's more kind
say
of a
that,
reincorporate.
Say that again.
Okay, if you, well, I'd rather say reincorporate than what they say. But anyway, leave, weave, conflate, right? Reincorporate. You bring it back in and you come back into the whole thing and you go back to who you were.
Where's that from?
I can't, I've tried, I don't know where I got it from.
Somebody just handed you that.
No, I was looking up something about you beforehand. And by the way, I found out that you also used to dress as a Ninja Turtle and used to ride a unicycle to school and juggle. And you wonder why you got beaten up.
Yeah. Well, the Ninja, no, yes. Right. Yes, we've established that.
Right.
It's just the level of thickness. No, I'll tell you what it was. The Ninja Turtle thing. When I was a kid, I used to have a backpack, and the bit that went against your back, not the bit that faced outwards, looked a bit like the inside of a Ninja Turtle, like of a turtle shell. So I put the backpack on the wrong way around.
Yeah, on the front.
So
yeah,
on the front, so it looked like the front of a Ninja Turtle. And then I got a plastic bin lid that had panels in it, so it looked like the shell. And I tied that onto my back, and then I cut two holes in my school tie and then tied that around my face so I looked like a Ninja Turtle. And it was a very, to be fair, it was on an ad hoc basis, it was quite a good Ninja Turtle cobbled together outfit. And the group of people who I showed that I went, you know, cowabunga, right? They were all laughing their heads off. And then that laughter drew the attention of, shall we call them less than enthusiastic members of the school community, who decided to essentially beat me up. But the indignity of being beaten up is one thing, but when you're dressed as a Ninja Turtle taking a kicking, I mean, I found the whole thing hilarious.
Yeah, I'd
because
say so.
The Ninja Turtles, the one thing they're good at is fighting.
Right.
So to see a Ninja Turtle, a poorly put together Ninja Turtle, basically taking a kicking, made it even funnier for the people who had been laughing in the
first
place.
Who got the last laugh? The bullies, because they went off and bought tickets to your gig. See?
Exactly.
Exactly.
See where you're coming from.
Yeah, you see where I'm coming from, do you? Good, okay.
For now, I am in musical theatre.
Yeah, but yeah. Have you done it before, by the way? This you're not starting on this one, are you? I mean, have you played this before?
Yeah, well, I start this week.
Oh, right, yes. Okay. And then I have to ask about the whole thing again in terms of just the discipline. It's doable, is it? I'm serious. Like, a guy like you doing that kind of thing is pretty weird, I would have thought.
Well, we'll have to see. But I know for a fact. Here's the thing with the show. It's such, because it's Mel Brooks, the writing is, it's the perfect rhythm. Everything that he's written, the script as well, he's just got it to the point where, obviously, when he first wrote the script, and then he got it in Nathan Lane, Matthew Broderick, you know, while they were doing it, they've refined and refined and refined. So that script is pretty much as, it's the tightest script it's going to be. But, you know, within that, you know, there's enough physical stuff going on that I can, I can play around with that. And then the way that, because this is what I don't get, what you don't get with stand-up is you don't get, you know, there's the interplay between me and the people that I'm talking to in the crowd. But obviously, when it's two people and you've got somebody to bounce off, there's a rhythm there as well.
Yeah.
So where I'll be playing is with that rather than going, oh, let's leave the script and...
Yeah, just one last one I wanted to ask you there, Ross, just before. Spontaneous is what people say you are, because you go on stage with maybe a little idea or two or maybe not, and you come out with 20 ideas and then you conflate them all and they go for 3 or 4 hours there. Is spontaneous, or does it take long to kind of master?
Oh, blimey. It takes... The thing is that you've got to be in the moment, and sometimes your instinct is to go, you know, the instinct is to, you'll be on stage and you think, well, actually, the the easiest thing to do would be to just go to... well, I'm trying to say it. It's one of those things where you have to be... You have to be on it. You have to be in that frame of mind, you know, because otherwise it's one of those things.
You're afraid to say in the zone because it sounds too kind of cliched.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. You've got to be in the zone.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. Oh, and do you ever feel, by the way, Ross, that, you know, that you get paid just to see how really silly you can be?
Yeah.
It's good, isn't it?
Brilliant.
Yeah, better than it might have been. What could you have been, by the way? A circus performer, I believe. You did try it, didn't
what
you?
What could I have been? Homeless.
Homeless.
Could have quite easily. I was a stuntman. That's what I was going to be. If I hadn't have made it in stand-up, I would have liked to have done that. That would have been good. Puppeteer. Wouldn't mind being a puppeteer.
Puppeteer. All right, fair enough. Yeah. Well, listen, you are now playing a Nazi and a loony in the producers at the Borgoshi Energy Theatre, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 July. And that's for that for the moment. Then we'll see what happens after that. Ross Noble, thanks a million. We'll see you at the Borgoshi in July. Thanks a million for happening. Good luck. Take it easy. Bye.